94.9 KUOW Seattle, Thursday, December 13th, 2007. I'm Amanda Wild. This is Sound Reflections, an exploration into the musical soul of the Northwest. Vintage is vital to the music scene. Hear from local music makers who use vintage instruments and equipment for sounds they can't find anywhere else. Carney Barton's studio microphones have been continuously on for about 50 years. He's used those microphones to record sounds from the Sonics to the Seattle Symphony. As an engineer and producer, Carney has seen his equipment go from current and common to vintage and rare. But Carney says the old equipment is still the cutting-edge technology for recording sound. Carney, thanks for having me in your studio today.
Well, thank you for coming down.
We're sitting in front of your warm Neumann microphones. Can you give a description of these?
The microphone is a condenser microphone with a tube in the microphone itself. So the body of the microphone even feels warm. The tube gives a warm, fuller sound than the transistor mics or a standard ribbon or dynamic microphone. The condenser gives a very crisp sound. It reaches out and pulls in the sound from a distance.
Why did you decide to acquire these particular microphones back in the 50s?
Well, in the early 50s, these became the standard for high fidelity. And the first hi-fi records, the U47 was the featured microphone. They called it Telefunken in that day because in the United States, they were distributed by Telefunken. So it had a Telefunken logo on the front, but you saw the Neumann label on the back. But these mics were the featured microphone because of their clarity and their rich sound. So almost everybody was using them. And I acquired as many as I could get my hands on, especially when Neumann came out with a transistor mic. And everybody was saying, oh, wow, the transistor is state-of-the-art. So they were selling their mics to buy the transistor ones. So they were selling the tube mics. I bought all I could get my hands on. They found the transistor didn't get the same full sound as the tube and started to buy them back, and the price jumped from $225 each to about $2,500 each. And now I see where they're up to $12,000 or $15,000 each because they are such a vintage thing, such a unique sound.
These mics have been pretty much continuously on since you got them in the 50s. Why leave them on all the time?
Well, the reason I leave them on is if you turn them on and off, you're putting stress on the tube filaments and so forth. After they've been off, it takes about 15 minutes for them to warm up and settle down. You'll get sputtering and spitting and everything else because of the components warming up.
Who did you record on these microphones?
Started with the Fleetwoods, was one of the first groups that I did. The Ventures, the Fraddicks, Adventurers, and then up later the Kingsmen, Sonics, Wailers, Fraddicks again, and just about every rock band in the Northwest up through the 70s and 80s to Seattle Symphony and Seattle Opera.
We're going to hear an example of the sound you got with the Neumann microphones, and I asked you just to choose something out of the hundreds or thousands of recordings that you've done on these in the past 50 years. So you chose something from Magnificat for us to hear. What is this selection?
Well, this is one of the parts with the, it doesn't show the solos, but it's a Gloria, which is a really large production thing. I mean, he's got the whole orchestra and the singers really, really putting out.
And why choose the Neumanns for this recording?
Because they do reach out and pick up the sound. They have the clarity of sound, the warmth of it gives it full body. So it makes it as big as the performers were on stage.
How many microphones did you use to record this ensemble, which I think totaled, what, up to?
There would be about 524, 525 people, five microphones. Sounds. Two on the orchestra, two on the chorus, and one on the solos.
It sounds minimal.
Yes. Well, I kind of believe in the fewer the better. because you have less problems with phasing and everything else. I did a recording with Seattle Opera of Cinderella, and NPR did a recording of Cinderella with another production, another opera company. And I used 5 mics, 2 on the orchestra, 3 on the singers. And with the NPR, they did it on 16 track with about 25, 30 microphones. And the one I have sounds bigger and fuller and more alive than theirs because of the cancellation problems and just too much going on.
Let's hear that selection from Magnificat. This was recorded by Carney Barton here in Seattle, and we're talking about his use of these Neumann microphones that we're sitting in front of in his studio today. I'm here in Carney Barton's studio. He's a recording engineer and producer here in Seattle. He's been recording for over 50 years, and during that time, he's acquired a number of vintage microphones, which he used then and still uses today. And we just heard Magnificat. We've been talking about the Neumann microphones that you use. Do you use any other kind of microphones?
Almost all of them are Neumann, other than the kick drum, which is an electro voice, and the 2 Altecs on the other drums.
As you look back over your catalog of recordings, knowing technology now and what's been added to it, would you do anything different than you've done?
Not really, because I use a tape recorder that has tube electronics and tube mics, and the tubes get a sound that the transistors don't. Guitar players, they started making transistor amps, and they all then went to try to find the tube amps because they had more punch and more fullness to them and everything else and more warmth. And the transistor amps, they started adding components to try to make it sound like a tube, but it still didn't sound like the original tubes.
Carney, you're often sought after as a producer and engineer for bands who love your sound. How much of that is these microphones?
A big part of it, because they want that full sound, and things like the Sonics had a very edgy sound to it, a snarly, growly thing. I can get that with the tube electronics on the tape recorder and with the tubes and the mics that you don't get with some of the newer stuff.
We'll hear a little bit of the Sonics now, Psycho, as recorded by Carney Barton. Sonics out of Seattle, recorded by Carney Barton with his Neumann microphones. And we've been talking about the vintage microphones Carney uses and the fact that people still come to him wanting to get that Carney Barton sound. Carney, you've now had 50 years of experience with these microphones. Are you surprised they've lasted as long as they have?
Neumann built them to last. I was recording a concert of high school bands in a gymnasium and had the mic stands at their highest elevation. While I was moving one stand, somebody tripped over the other, knocked the mic down. It went down and hit the concrete floor, broke the mounting connector in half, and the microphone still stayed working ever, but it's good. I just taped it on the mic stand. It was just as good as if nothing had happened. So I kind of expect them to last forever.
We've been recording our interview on your Neumann microphones, which is such a treat. And just for contrast, I'm going to now hook up the portable machine I brought, and I brought what is called a shotgun microphone. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, they use them to shoot birds. No, I'm familiar with the concept of it and so forth.
What do you think the difference in quality is going to be once we hear what we've recorded with the microphone I've brought, the shotgun mic, versus these Neumann microphones?
I would say probably about 50% difference in them. The Neumanns, I feel, will probably outshine the other by about 50%.
Meaning a 50% bigger, fuller sound?
Fuller, warmer, more realistic.
Let's find out. Okay, Carney, now we are on the shotgun microphone, which is said to pick up sound from all around the room just as your Neumann microphones do.
The shotgun will tend to be a more narrow spectrum on its pickup, usually. The idea being that it reaches out to pick out a certain spot. So it probably will sound a little more tight, compressed in, and not quite as wide and full of sound.
And now we've been able to compare these side by side so listeners can be the judge. Thanks for letting me come in your studio, Carney.
Thank you for coming down. It's been a pleasure and nice to have you in a warm environment with warm microphones.
Find out more about Carney Barton at KUOW.org. I'm Amanda Wild, Thursday, December 13th, 2007, 94.9 KUOW, Thursday, November 15th, 2007. I'm Amanda Wild. This is Sound Reflections, an exploration into the musical soul of the Northwest. We're uncovering secrets of the Northwest sound by talking with the people who create it, the producers. Carney Barton is a Northwest original. He played a key role in the creation of that now legendary rock sound of Northwest bands, such as the Sonics, the Wailers, the Kingsmen, and the Fleetwoods, the Ventures, and the Standells. Barton's recording techniques are rare and unusual by today's standards. Today, Carney Barton talks about the production style that still inspires bands from all over the world to track him down and apply his expertise to their music. Carney, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, and it's nice to be here.
You've been producing now for just about half a century. When you look at the catalog, the hundreds of bands behind you, do you feel like you've been recording for 50 years?
It's hard to realize how long it has been. Time goes by so quickly, and keeping busy still recording, why it doesn't seem that long ago that I first started out with the Frantics.
You were one of the only people at that time in the late 50s and early 60s recording this really rocky, noisy guitar sound that, for instance, the Sonics and the Wailers had. This music was just emerging at the time, so how did you know what you needed to capture?
I think I've been lucky in having a good ear for all types of music. It was kind of a thing of listening to the band as they played and just try to make it sound the same or better in the recording itself. And we were using tube electronic, which I still do, which gives a punchier sound to it. I drove the tape hard. A lot of people tried to stay at zero. I'd be recording at plus three and really driving the tape, and that's what gave it that real heavy sound, hard sound.
Really pushing the levels.
Right.
You brought in one of the early recordings you made with the Frantics, and this also starred a voice that we've come to know as someone behind the scenes, a Mr. Carney Barton.
Yeah, well, it was It was an instrumental version that was first that they recorded Werewolf. And Bob decided it needed more, so Bob Reisdorf, the president of Dalton Records, did the narration at the beginning, which is the narration from the film. And Bonnie Guitar did a wolf howl at the end. And I suggested that I snarl throughout, and so I'm snarling throughout the record.
Let's take a listen to a little bit of this one.
All right.
It's Werewolf
by the Fraddicks.
Even the man whose heart is pure and says his prayers at night can change to a wolf when the wolf bane blooms and the full moon shining bright.
With Werewolf, Carney Barton, the producer, they're also contributing.
Yep. I went crazy in the middle during the snarls.
One of the other early recordings that we're going to contrast with this is this Little Bill recording you brought in of Louie Louie. And this was the first recording of Louie Louie, is that right?
First recording in the Northwest. Richard Berry wrote it and had a hit with it, or semi-hit. And we did it with Little Bill. And he did it more in the original Calypso style. And his friends in the Wailers came down to the studio and saw what he was doing, ran out to another studio and did their version with Rockin' Robin, which was a raunchier version, and took the tape to the radio stations to beat him out, make it seem like he was covering them instead of them covering him. So what are friends for?
Did that work?
It worked. They got the thing going. And it's funny because Louie Louie was a record that, or a song that everybody, all the bands had to play at least twice every set. But nobody would buy the record in the Northwest. Rockin' Robin sold some. Little Bill didn't get a chance to sell. Paul Revere and the Raiders did a version that didn't really sell. And the Kingsmen wanted to record it, and I told them not to, that they'd never get it started in the Northwest. And I was right. 3 months later, it still hadn't done anything here. A distributor in Boston got a hold of a copy and started on the East Coast. And a kid in Indiana called the governor and said, if you played it at 33 and a third, there were all these filthy lyrics in it. And a guy from the PI came in to interview me and the Kingsmen while we were recording. And I told him, I'll play at any speed you want, backwards, forwards, upside down. That's not in there. The governor, instead of listening to the record, immediately banned the record, and the sales skyrocketed. So the Kingsmen had a number one hit because of that. And so that's what made the Kingsmen. But they still didn't sell in the Northwest. Weird.
Carney Barton's here, and we're talking with him about the magic of making music and listening to some of the seminal recordings to come out of the Northwest in the late 50s and early 60s. Here's Little Bill with Louie Louie. Here. He did that original recording of Louie Louie from Little Bill, and we were talking about how that was more in a Calypso style. That was the original intention of the author. This is not as dense a sound as the Frantics that we heard earlier, and you get this very crisp, clear sound. We can understand all the lyrics. Is that a signature for you?
On most things, yeah. There again, it depends on the music. I tend to put the voice out in front, but they had a very clean sound in their own and a very tight, real sound.
Are you ever surprised here, listening back to these early recordings of yours, just how much of the feeling you were able to capture?
Well, this is the thing with this one. I hadn't heard it in a long, long time, and somebody was talking about different Louie Louies. I said, well, you got to hear Little Bill's version, and played it, and I was amazed at how great everything sounded on it, because I'd forgotten, and this was when I was first getting into the business. And then later, doing groups like the Sonics, where everything was just screaming, why, it was quite a contrast.
By a certain point, if people wanted to record in the Northwest, they were going to see Carney Barton.
Yeah, I got to where I was doing just about every group that was around here, and groups from out of town, the Knickerbockers, the Standells, and I did some things with Quincy Jones and Dave Brubeck and Cal Jader, and so I got into jazz things as well as the rock and roll.
And you have a lot of recording equipment, don't you, that you were using for these first recordings we've heard back in the late 50s?
I've got the same tape recorder and the same microphones that I was using then, and they still outperform the newer stuff. From 1958 to now, and they're still every bit as good.
Let's hear some other artists you recorded with those old microphones. You brought in this Ann Wilson track. How did this come about?
Well, this she had a group called Daybreak, Ann and Nancy. This was well before Heart. Ann had to be about 14 years old at the time, I think, because it was in the early 60s, around 63, 64. And I just fell in love with her voice. It's an original song that Ann wrote, Through Ice and Glass, and it's a beautiful sound.
Laughing, crying, all the same, time again to play the game, and they walking hand in hand from the train, don't understand. Train, get off the train, get off the train.
Carney Barton is here. He is the producer of that very, very early Ann Wilson song, Through Eyes and Glass. This is one of the first recordings you did in stereo. The first two recordings we heard were in mono. Why was that?
Well, it was done for AM radio on 45s, and so AM was monaural. And so everything was recorded in mono, and this was one of the few that I did in actual stereo.
Carney Barton is here, and we're taking just a quick flip through his catalog of music from the earliest Northwest raw recordings. Do you think people can hear your music and hear that it was Carney Barton producing?
I guess so, because I get people say, well, come in and talk about things that they've collected that I've done. I don't even know if I even got credit on the record label for it, so they kind of recognized that particular sound, and they say that I originated the Northwest sound, and they asked me what the Northwest sound is. I couldn't tell you.
You may not be able to define it, but you knew what to do with it.
Yeah, I played it by ear, and the ear worked.
Carney, you were a DJ at one of the very first radio stations in Seattle, though not in its early days of the 1920s. The station was KTW.
Correct.
Well, what would be your sign-off today?
Well, it's been a long and wonderful journey.
Thanks for coming in, Carney.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet and visit with you.